This is Sue Hildebrand, your host this week for The Point Is, alternating each week with Paul O'Rourke Babb, and we're broadcasting from downtown Chico, California. I was talking with some friends last night about this moment in history being an interesting one to be alive, but it's also a very confusing time. How, as mere mortals, are we able to understand all that is happening around the world in order to act and to advocate appropriately? We must rely on the media for information and analysis. For example, just last week, the president announced an increase in troops in Afghanistan by 17,000. Now, to many people, the war in Afghanistan is quote-unquote the good war. American and NATO troops are fighting Al-Qaeda, terrorist groups who are plotting to attack Americans and American interests. On the other hand, or maybe it's the other side of the same hand, American troops are fighting the Taliban in the region to protect Afghanis, especially women and girls, from the implementation of strict Sharia law. Is this justification for an increase in U.S. and NATO presence in Afghanistan to be trusted, or is there another motivation that is not being explained? As citizens living in a democracy, it's important that we understand what is happening around us and around the world in order to be informed, in order to direct our government what we want. In a globalized world, we rely greatly on the media. So one of the questions we'll explore today is, how trustworthy is the media? During the first part of The Point Is, we'll talk with Eric Bowler from the organization Media Matters for America to talk about, well, what he calls the Republican noise machine, also known as the mainstream media. In order to begin unraveling the spin coming from both the White House and the mainstream media regarding what is happening on the ground in Afghanistan, we'll talk with Sonali Kolhatkar, co-director of the Afghan Women's Mission, a group that works in solidarity with Afghans to improve health and educational facilities for Afghan refugees in Pakistan. For the second hour, we're going to check in with a couple of Chico locals about their work that you most likely will never learn about through mainstream media. First, we'll be joined by Chico State graduate and green economy advocate who's in Washington, D.C. right now at the PowerShift Conference, where it is estimated that over 10,000 young people have gone to D.C. this weekend to hold elected officials accountable for rebuilding our economy and reclaiming our future through bold climate and clean energy policy. We'll then talk with Ryan Lieber, photojournalist, who spent over 20 years in Chico, but has spent the last 7 years in Southeast Asia taking photos, and in particular documenting the Kachin Independence Organization, which is an organization made up of 6 tribes working together to oppose the military junta in Myanmar. Ryan is also offering a workshop for learning to do photojournalism next weekend. So stay tuned for all that and more on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico, the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.
Revolution starts now. Yeah, the in a man just body high. Your revolution starts now. Last night I had a dream that the world had turned around. All our hopes had come to be, and people gathered around. They offer all what they can bring, and nobody went with that. Other than a song to sing, the revolution starts now.
You are listening to The Point Is on KZFR. This is Sue Hildebrand, your host for the next 2 hours. During this first part of The Point Is, we'll talk about the state of the mainstream media, its coverage of the first 30 days of the Obama administration, and the importance of a trustworthy media for a healthy democracy. We'll then talk with Sonali Kolhatkar, co-director of the Afghan Women's Mission, to get a more direct account of what is happening on the ground in Afghanistan, particularly with respect to President Obama's recent announcement to increase troop levels by 17,000. During the second hour of The Point Is, we'll talk with Ben Davenport, Chico State graduate who is attending the PowerShift conference in Washington, D.C. this weekend, where thousands of students are lobbying Congress to invest in clean energy. And finally, we'll be joined in the studio by photojournalist Ryan Lieber about his work with the Kachin Independence Army in Myanmar and the value of photojournalism in telling the stories. Please join the conversation during any part of the next 2 hours. We have quite a few guests this morning, so please call in early with your questions and comments. And as always, the number to call is 530-895-0167. We begin with the mainstream media and what my first guest calls the Republican noise machine, of the first talking about the first month of the Obama administration. Joining us on the phone from Montclair, New Jersey, is Eric Bollert. Eric Bollert is the author of Lapdogs: How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. Bollert worked as a senior writer for Salon.com, where he wrote extensively about media and politics. Prior to that, he worked as a contributing editor for Rolling Stone, and he's currently a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. I'm really happy to welcome you to The Point Is, Eric Bollert.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to start with, the reason that I was interested in talking with you was because of an article that just came out that you wrote. It's called Unhinged in 30 Days, The Right-Wing Media's Obama-Era Implosion. It was such an interesting article, and in that article you refer to the Republican noise machine. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's actually a phrase my boss, David Brock, who founded Media Matters, came up with it in a book he wrote at the turn of the decade. And the Republican noise machine is sort of this, it's, you know, Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and the Weekly Standards and the conservative bloggers. It's this sort of hothouse atmosphere that they've created, which, you know, it's sort of an echo chamber, but it's all very partisan, sort of Republican propaganda. So they're able to take sort of talking points from the Republican Party and sort of introduce them onto the media landscape and sort of legitimize them, and then very often force or convince the mainstream media to pick them up. And, you know, they're able to do it through either sort of supporting Republican initiatives or attacking Democrats and Democratic politicians and liberals and things like that. So they've created this very... I think sort of powerful. It's essentially a propaganda arm of the Republican Party, and these are media outlets. I think have their sort of main loyalty is to the Republican Party and to the conservative movement, and their sort of secondary loyalty is to journalism.
Well, let me ask you, Eric Bollert. I deal with a lot of young people. and that are really just starting to learn about politics. And I talked with a group the other day and asked them exactly this question and said, if you have to learn about the world through the media, how do you know if they're lying to you or not, if they're really being honest? And their reaction was, well, isn't there some kind of law that makes them tell the truth? So talk about that. Isn't there a law?
Well, there's sort of professional standards and professionalism. And the thing with journalism, the great thing about it has always been, you know, people go to journalism school, but you don't have to, and there's no certificate and there's no diploma. It's not like getting a law degree. Anyone can be a journalist, and that's the great part about it. It's also, you know, the real danger of it. It's great for decades and generations that people who, you know, practice journalism, you know, sort of signed on voluntarily to this ethical code of of fairness and accuracy and printing corrections and not taking sides. And it just fell under the larger umbrella of professionalism. What we're seeing now is these Republican outlets, they don't really see any need to adhere to traditional journalism standards. And so if they want to just sort of spread misinformation or sort of attack Democrats or liberals in a very personal way, that's what they're going to do. And it absolutely does sort of confuse the picture because, you know, you've got a large portion of the media still sort of adhering to the professional standards, but then you've got this subsection that isn't really concerned with those standards. And mixing that in with the other stuff, and from a news consumer's perspective, I think it can become sort of confusing. Because unless you know sort of the backstory in terms of the media outlets, you don't really know that they might not be telling you the truth. So there is no law, and I think it's good. I don't think we want journalism to be run by the government or anything like that. But the reason it worked so well for so long is that there was this adherence to professional standards, but we're seeing some people now ignoring those standards.
Well, I do want to go back to this topic of how do we sift through the garbage and how do we actually find meaningful information and analysis. But I want to go a little bit deeper into your article, Unhinged in 30 Days, the right-wing media's Obama-era implosion. And it really is such an interesting article where you said, you know, within the first 30 days, we're seeing, for example, Fox News' Sean Hannity call Barack Obama arrogant, dishonest, and radical. And I'm quoting you, Sean Hannity announced during a single 10-second chunk of primetime TV last week. And I'm assuming that a lot of people listening to The Point Is right now don't necessarily pay attention to Fox News.
Right.
Listeners of The Point Is are quite smart and pretty savvy. So tell us what is being said right now about the Republican noise coming from the Republican noise machine.
Yeah, what's so amazing and what prompted me to write that article is the vehemence and the anger of sort of the hate rhetoric being directed at Obama and the extraordinary speed with which it's been produced. I mean, I wrote that article at a time when Obama had basically been in office for 1 month, and already we're seeing all, you know, just sort of commonplace allegations that he's leading the country towards communism, towards socialism, towards fascism. Michelle Malkin, who's a high-profile right-wing blogger, was photographed at an anti-Obama rally with a guy with a swastika poster. So it really is, as I pointed out, you know, Rush Limbaugh sort of famously said the week of Obama's inauguration, "I hope he fails," and that sort of created a stir. Most people don't say that about a new American president. But looking back after a month, I mean, that seemed absolutely benign in retrospect. And again, we're talking about arrogant and language like that, and communism and fascism. It took the sort of the left and liberals in America, it took them about 5 or 6 years, really, to reach the level of anger they expressed towards George Bush that conservatives have managed to gin up in like 28 days. Bush obviously, you know, launched a botched war, you know, sort of ruined the economy, watched a major American city flood underwater. I mean, he did some extraordinarily, monumentally incompetent things to create that anger on the left. Barack Obama has basically passed a tax, has passed an economic bill, and yet that's what has unleashed in just 30 days this sort of unprecedented hate rhetoric.
Right. Well, what do you attribute to this speed? And what I mean by that is, how do we interpret this quick anger? Is it a matter of the right wing is afraid of the power and the popularity of Barack Obama, or is it simply a matter of this is what we need to do in order to win back power in the future? Can we actually read between the lines in terms of how quickly the right wing media is responding and how vehemently and really a lot of common phrases you hear from different seemingly sources?
That's a good question in terms of what it reveals about them, other than the fact that they embrace, they have this sort of knee-jerk reaction to hate or a knee-jerk embrace of hate. I'm not sure what it, I mean, I was stunned by it. It's not like Barack Obama, you know, won a contested election and didn't win the popular vote, and therefore there was still this sort of lingering bitterness. I mean, he won in an electoral landslide. I thought that sort of everyone had sort of come to grips that, you know, he won easily. He had a certain kind of mandate. But all of that just sort of went out the window. I guess it was the stimulus package that set conservatives off, you know, which is just sort of ironic. I mean, they expressed almost no concern about the economy or the sort of leadership of the economy when President Bush was in office, and obviously most of the damage done to the economy was, or virtually all of it was done under his watch. So it's not like these conservatives had been hyper aware and hyper critical about the deficit or spending under Bush, and therefore they just sort of continued that fervent, you know, opposition under Obama. They expressed almost no concern about spending and deficits under Bush, and yet all of a sudden, we sort of flip the calendar page, and they go completely sort of bonkers.
Right.
So there doesn't seem to be much rhyme or reason to it. I guess, you know, obviously they were in power for most of the last 8 years, and maybe they just hadn't really come to terms with the fact that they were in a stark minority.
Well, let me ask you, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Point Is, and we're talking with Eric Bollert from Media Matters for America. We're talking about the Republican noise machine, as been described by Media Matters and Eric Bollert. And you can join the conversation. If you have a question, a comment, give us a call at 530-895-0167. Eric, let me ask you, you referred to the fact that Barack Obama won this election pretty handily. There was no question about the mandate that he received. I mean, he ran on a platform of change, and he comes to power. He has a lot of support. He's very popular, and we have the mainstream media talking about how radical he is and how scary he is, and he's the Antichrist and he's the next Hitler. Why is there little pushback from the from progressives, from people like Rachel Maddow or Keith Olbermann, or how come we don't see that?
Well, I wish they would sort of highlight this sort of the unhinged on the right, and because it's important, because the mainstream press is not doing it. I mean, if liberal protesters 30 days after George Bush took office in 2001 held anti-Bush rallies and waved around swastikas, that would be a news event, and there would be all kinds of coverage. There would have been all kinds of questions about, you know, how do Democrats separate themselves from these liberal radicals, and where did this hate come from, and why are they so unhate? I mean, it's a clearly new, it would have clearly been a newsworthy development. But when Republicans do it and conservatives do it and become completely unhinged, the press doesn't really say boo. They have been sort of whitewashing the hate speech of Rush Limbaugh and others for years. And I don't know, maybe there are so many battles to fight at this point. Maybe that's one reason progressives haven't really highlighted it or pushed back. But it's important to highlight this because I think Americans, you know, just sort of mainstream Americans and news consumers see it and are and note the oddity of it and think that Republicans and conservatives are sort of beyond the mainstream. And that's important because I think they are when they use this kind of language. But the press so far hasn't really made much of a deal about it.
Well, is it, I just want to maybe just push you a little bit more. Is it, I'm trying to think, what can people do to counter this? If we're not seeing it in the mainstream media, how do people respond to that? Is it simply a matter of who owns the news outlets, or that the right wing is better organized? Is there any wisdom that you can give us that would help us better organize against this?
Well, I think in terms of this specific topic, in terms of this hate rhetoric, you know, I think that the best way to do it is just try to highlight it, whether you have a blog or writing letters to the editor or calling radio shows or things like that. I mean, I think if we just highlight it, it becomes, you know, the conservatives have created this problem. This is the hate speech that they've adopted. I don't think we, you know, folks on the left need to anyway battle it. I think we just want to turn a spotlight on it because I think they're becoming their own worst enemy by adopting this kind of rhetoric. So I think, you know, basically just shining a spotlight on it, letting people know that, you know, how radical this rhetoric is and how unusual it is for a political movement to, you know, have a meltdown 30 days into a new presidency.
Well, help me understand this. You know, you obviously have been arguing that the conservative media is really trashing Obama's administration.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that we shouldn't be skeptical about the administration,
right.
But I mean, it's sort of unwarranted at this moment, at this stage of the game. But what we're always hearing is it's a liberal media. Watch
yeah.
out for the liberal media. Help
right.
us come to terms with that disconnect.
Oh, it's a huge disconnect, but you know, it's been a very effective sort of marketing and advertising campaign that conservatives have been using for almost four decades. I mean, that goes back to Barry Goldwater and Spiro Agnew. So there is sort of this working assumption that the press is media and the media is liberal. And in fact, that's why I wrote my book in 2006, Lapdogs, about the press and Bush, just to point out, look, there's no connection between what the press is doing now and with this sort of tired liberal media mantra. And I think we're seeing it again now with Barack Obama. I think the coverage the Beltway Press has given him in the first month is unrecognizable if you go back and look at the coverage it gave George Bush during his first 30 days in office, his first couple months. There's a complete double standard in the way, you know, sort of the corporate media deals with Democrats and Republicans. And the double standard is not, you know, they love Democrats because they're liberal. It's the opposite. And I think it's the opposite because they're out to disprove this point. I think the press has sort of developed rabbit ears about this allegation of a liberal media. What's the best way to prove you're not a liberal media is, you know, you go extraordinarily extra hard on a Democrat, and the other way to prove you're not part of the liberal media is you go easy on the Republican. So that's been going on for years, and we're seeing it again now with the Obama coverage.
Well, let me ask you, or I know we're getting down to the end of your time. Let me ask you two more quick questions. We are really seeing the crisis of journalism right now. I mean, the Denver Post just went out of business, and the Rocky Mountain News, and the Christian Science Monitor, which is really one of my all-time favorite news outlets, is only available online
right now.
Who is doing? Who has the money, really? Who is doing good investigative journalism? And really, where can listeners go to find trusted sources of information?
It's tough. It's very depressing. The Rocky Mountain News, the second paper in Seattle, is probably in the process of closing. The owner of the San Francisco Chronicle this week announced they might be closing. So that would be the first major city to have no newspaper. Denver and Seattle had two. It's very discouraging, and it's not only for journalism but for democracy, and it has extraordinary long-term implications for the way we function as a country. The only silver lining is there is some great stuff going on online. With the blogosphere and things like that. Unfortunately, they clearly don't have the resources of a large newspaper, and a lot of that content you're going to find online is more opinion and analysis, but still, it's there, it's growing, it's vibrant, people can find lots of great resources. I don't happen to think it can replace what newspapers do, and I think there's going to be a large, painful gap that exists, but if folks do go online, the Huffington Post and places like Media Matters, Talking Points Memo, Crooks and Liars, Fire Dog Lake, these are very sophisticated, well-written sites where you can sort of get lots of additional information and insight.
Well, let me ask you, and one last question and an opportunity. You mentioned that Media Matters for America is a good place to get reliable information, and I want to give you the opportunity to tell listeners what exactly Media Matters does and how we can support your work.
Oh, sure. Well, Media Matters is it's found at MediaMatters.org. It's a nonprofit progressive think tank based in D.C. It's been around going on 5 years. And really, we just sort of monitor the press in search of conservative misinformation. So we sort of monitor full-time, Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly and all that. But we also monitor the mainstream press because a lot of that misinformation filters into the press. We're sort of a collective ombudsman for news organizations that don't offer that. And every day we post, probably at least 10 items looking at journalism reports that were inaccurate or lacking context and things like that. We also have a blog called County Fair where we post lots of video clips from the cable shows as well as sort of quick media critiques. So there's a ton of information. We also have columns. I write a column as well. So it's really a great resource for folks who are, want to sort of get a look at behind the scenes. This is the article you read in your morning newspaper by the Associated Press, but here's what they left out, or here's what was inaccurate, and it gives you sort of a fuller picture.
Eric Bollert, I want to thank you so much for giving us a little bit of time today and pointing us in the right direction for accurate information.
Thanks. My pleasure.
You have a great weekend.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. All right. And that was Eric Bollert from the nonprofit media organization called Media Matters for America. He is the author of Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. And you can get more information, read his columns at MediaMatters.org. So we're going to take a quick break, and don't go away, of course, because when we come back, we're going to be joined on the phone with Sonali Kolhatkar to talk about Afghanistan, particularly important because of Barack Obama's announcement that we are going to send 17,000 additional troops to that region. So don't go away. We'll be right back on The Point Is.
Everybody's restless, and they got no place to go. Someone's always trying to tell them something they already know. So their anger and resentment flow, but don't it make you wanna rock and roll? You know the sheriff's got his problems too. He will surely take them out on you. In walks the village idiot, and his face is all aglow. He's been up all night listening to Mohammed's radio. Know him, make you wanna rock and roll all night long. Mohammed's radio. I heard somebody singing sweet and soulful on the radio. Mohammed's radio. Everybody's desperate, trying to make ends meet. Work all day, still can't pay the price of gasoline. And me, alas, their lives are incomplete. Don't it make you want to rock and roll all night long? Mohammed's radio. Been up all night listening for his trumpet. Hoping that the righteous might just come.
Just arrive.
I heard the general whispering to his aide-de-camp. Be watchful for.